It's time for JT the Brick on Fox Sports Vegas.
Hey, great to hear your voice again, JT.
Raider Nation, what's up?
We've got four picks in the top 35. We've got a couple number one picks next year. We're in transition. We're moving to Las Vegas a year from now.
He's going to do it the right way. He's going to catch every ball, take it to the end zone.
I'm ready to just get to work and serve some fresh air and some new energy around here.
JT the Brick.
Well, we want to finish. You know, I think that's all you can ask for as a football player or a coach, finish. You know, don't just do the job halfway done. Get the job done. Go all the way through the line, not to the line.
Dominate, commitment to excellence.
Believe me, the effort, all right, the concentration, the details were there tonight. It gives us something to really build on.
And now, here's JT the Brick.
Great to have you, JT, as we wrap up a big week. A week of us doing 2 hours every day from 4 to 6. Thank you to Golden Entertainment. Our lead sponsor, everything they do for us from PT's Happy Hour, from 5 to 7, midnight to 2, and the brand new Boulevard in Maine, right inside the all-new Strat. We were there a week ago on Friday and had a great time. So there's a lot going on over there at Golden Entertainment, especially with Sean Patrick, Sierra Gold, the SG Bar, everything they do. If you're looking for Happy Hour, it's right here in the middle of our show from 5 to 7. All their drink specials, their food specials. You see the ads and the billboards all around town. No debate, it's the best Happy Hour in town for the prices, the service, everything that you experience thanks to PT's. We got a big show, so it's going to be fast here for the next 2 hours. Michael Gelkin will join us from the Las Vegas Review-Journal. He's their lead Raiders insider. He'll join us here in a couple of minutes. We'll dial him up. Also, I toured the Raider facility today. I got cool photos up at Facebook at JT the Brick. It was just me and Tom Blanda, the only two guys in the whole place for about 2 hours other than the construction crew. It was awesome. I went to the suite sections, down to the field, up to the highest point where the torch is going to be, the open lanai area that looks out. And he really went on a deep dive with me to show me what this stadium's going to look like and the enormity of this project and how many people are working every day to put a plan in place to try to keep this thing on time. And it is on time. It will open on time. I saw how they're growing grass and trying to attempt to grow grass on the outside and everything else that they're doing. It's incredible. And to be there, really appreciate the tour I had today. It was at least 2 hours, and we walked the whole footprint of the property today. And it was the first time I really got a chance to spend a couple of hours with Tom Blanda at the stadium and see all the bells and whistles, all the cool things that are going to happen here by 2020. So I had a lot of fun. But every day I look at my phone and I get an alert from the Raiders that they're signing someone new. I wanted to bring in Michael Gelkin from the Review-Journal. Covers the Raiders as good as anybody. And Michael, good to talk to you again. Let's begin with these signings as of late. Alex Barrett today, they picked up another safety. I'm just surprised. Are you surprised that they're bringing in so many bodies and locking so many players down?
I think what they want to do is afford themselves as much draft day flexibility as they can, where they don't have a particular position of such glaring need that they have really little choice when they're on the clock but to address that position and perhaps look past a player whose overall talent they consider favorable to that player who happens to play a position of need. And so when you're signing extra safety, for example, you're really giving yourself that option on draft day where you don't feel you need to take a defensive, you know, a safety. And Dre's have really done the same thing at cornerback. I don't think there's going to be a moment between April 25th and 27th where there's a DB on the board that the Raiders feel they have to take to fill a need on their roster.
What do you think have been the biggest upgrades? Everybody's going to say Antonio Brown because he's the best player and what they've done up front on the offensive line. But overall, what have you been most surprised or impressed by in the offseason when it comes to the volume of players at what particular side of the ball, offense or defense?
Well, I think offense. Defensively, you know, Paul Kuenter needs a lot more help before he's got a real serviceable unit. I mean, certainly when it comes to getting after the quarterback, Raiders have a long, long way to go. But when you look at offensively, one key focal point for the Raiders this offseason is they wanted to surround Derek Carr with more help. And that can come in a number of forms. It can come in terms of protection. You sign Trent Brown to making him the highest paid offensive lineman in NFL history with the guaranteed money that he has fully guaranteed over the first 2 years of his deal. You have him on one side, Colton Miller, who's going to be an offseason stronger this year. Between the two of them, between the acquisition and player development, those should be substantial upgrades to the situation the Raiders had in 2018. He also helped Derek Carr by giving him more weapons. You mentioned Antonio Brown, also added Tyrell Williams, Ryan Grant, someone the Raiders had their eye on last year in free agency. Ultimately, he chose to sign with the Indianapolis Colts. Now he's back with the Raiders for good, under a one-year contract worth up to $2.5 million. So just the veteran pieces in place, it was something when you look back. I did that as an exercise this offseason. You go back and you look at all 50-plus sacks that Derek Carr took, and most of them are in the shotgun. Some of them you could say, you know, Derek could have done something here or there with his footwork or otherwise, but I mean, there are some plays where he just doesn't have a chance just because of the right tackle play or the guard play. And so we're still going to see the Raiders. I don't think they're done. I wouldn't be surprised if they draft a number one running back or a number one tight end or a starting guard. You really could have three offensive starters still to come the draft, potentially up to three. So I think that's been a big focal point again, and I don't think it's over just yet.
Michael Gelkin covers the Raiders for the Las Vegas Review-Journal. How do you think Carr's been handling all the rumors? Because when Kyler Murray sits down with Gruden and Mayock, clearly they want to do their due diligence. Not if they're going to draft him. He'll probably be gone at number one, but they get an opportunity to put him on the whiteboard to get to know him. They're going to compete against him down the road. But, you know, Derek's been going to Instagram, and he's been going on social media. He came out to Henderson for the groundbreaking. He's around a little bit more, and now he's working out, from what I can tell, with Antonio Brown all the time. Where do you think his mindset is?
I think it's in a healthy place. I think when he looks at the moves that the Raiders have made in free agency or trade as it relates to Antonio Brown, he understands what the team is doing. The team is trying to give Derek a better chance for success than he did last season. And between adding the personnel that they've added and also just giving him another year of stability from a schematic standpoint, having John Gruden there in year two with him, that should pay tremendous dividends for any quarterback, certainly for Derek Carr, who had four different play callers in his first five seasons in the league, with John Gruden here under a 10-year contract. There maybe is no greater benefactor to that than Derek Carr, because the carousel for him ends. So I think Derek Carr has a pretty good sense of what the Raiders are trying to do. I don't think he's probably spending too much time worrying about Kyler Murray or any other quarterback the team's working out or having dinner with, because he probably understands what I think more people should understand. It really behooves a team to do as much research as it can, particularly when you're picking the top five, on the quarterbacks, because these are guys who you're going to be lining up against, most likely, for years to come. You know, Kyler Murray, if he's what people think that he is, he could be giving defenses in this league fits for the next several plus years. And so if you have a chance to pick his brain, if you're John Gruden, you get a chance to get him on the board, talk football with him, understand how his mind works, understand what makes him tick, how he processes information, go over college plays with him, really get into the nitty-gritty. Why wouldn't you when this is a guy you're staying to face in the future? I mean, this could be a guy that you're facing in the playoffs or Week 17 in a game you have to get into the postseason. Why wouldn't you want to sit down with a player like that when you have the opportunity? So if I'm Derek Carr, and I'm reading about it, hearing people on First Take and all these other shows talk about this and that, about what the Raiders are going to do at quarterback, I would just be patient, wait for April 25th to come and go, because sitting here today, Derek Carr is the Raiders franchise quarterback, and I've heard nothing that leads me to believe come April 26th, it'll be anything different.
Michael Gelkin's our guest as we wrap it up. That's a great segue to what I call the Mahomes effect, because I think the number one issue for the Raiders going forward for the next 5, maybe 10 years is Mahomes. He's the number one player in their division. He's not good. He's great. He's already an MVP, and Gruden's going to have to figure out a way with his defensive staff to stop him. That's why I think it's imperative that they get four starters with those four picks in the top 35, not developmental guys. Nothing against Colton Miller, but I thought that was a bit of a reach. I didn't think he was a top 15 player overall. If you got him in the late first round or second round, but they saw something in him, and he ended up starting, and he was a grinder for them. But I just don't want to see, Michael, a guy come in who they have to develop, and he comes in as a backup. Do you think that's the mission of Mayock, to get four elite players and not package those picks together? I think they got to go 4 for 4.
Well, ideally, you're going to have an impact player at every position. Ideally, you're not going to draft any busts. Ideally, you're going to draft players who fit exactly into what you want to do as a football team, and these guys come in, they love football, they stay healthy, and they're able to develop, make a significant jump from year one to year two. They're players for you. After you develop them, you reward them with a second year, with a second contract going into their fifth season. Or, you know, all of that is the road that you want. Realistically, is that feasible? It's a real challenge. I think if we're going to go into this draft, and with the Raiders having four picks in the top 35, expect that they're all going to be home runs and they're all going to have huge impacts year one. Ideally, that's what you want, but I think we tend to, and we can go back and look at previous drafts, and that'll make this point clear, we tend to overestimate the impact a young player, a 20, 21, 22, 23-year-old player will have year one. It's difficult to jump from college to the NFL. I don't care if you're coming from Alabama or some small Division II school. It takes some time to understand what this league is about, how to prepare, how to be a pro, and you can go on and on about the challenges that come with a rookie calendar where after your bowl game, you're training for the combine, you're training for your pro day, you're traveling all these teams. It's an exhaustive year to go with learning the playbook and understanding what it takes to be a pro. So it'll be a challenge for the Raiders and for any other NFL team to get the sort of immediate impact that everyone would like and sometimes you see from a rookie. But if the Raiders can draft and develop and build this thing so that these guys are football players and foundational pieces who might not be the rookie of the year candidates year one, but year two are breakthrough type of guys, I think the Raiders would sign up for that because they're building for the long term.
Michael, one more. Overall, I look at all the bodies and players that came in this offseason compared to last year up in Napa where it was clear to everybody they were signing guys for one-year deals. They weren't going to bring them back. And then once Gruden started making deals and players were getting benched and not playing, he was looking to hit the reset button. Now with all the players that we've touched on and talked about in this offseason, shouldn't they be vastly improved? I mean, if they get swept by the Chargers in Kansas City, those are four losses. You're only going to win so many games. That schedule's tougher than most people. I think it's tougher than the Patriots, who won the Super Bowl. What are expectations when you're around the league talking to your peers about the Raiders? Vegas has them at six wins. Shouldn't they be much better than they were last year from a personnel standpoint?
I think they will be better. I think offensively in particular. You look at what the Raiders were doing under John Gruden. They were running some really creative, sophisticated, advanced concepts that, because of execution, because of personnel, didn't really show itself on the scoreboard. I mean, if you actually go back and look at the film and see the type of plays that John Gruden was dialing up, you find plenty of source for optimism in the future if the Raiders can actually have players who can run their plays and their route trees and actually protect your car and that sort of thing. Well, the Raiders, based on what they've done so far and adding some of the established professionals that they've brought in, you look at Antonio Brown in particular, it's a huge upgrade to anything the Raiders had, and that includes before the Amari Cooper trade. Tyrell Williams, probably not a number one wide receiver in this league, obviously, yet, but we'll see how he develops. He's gotten a lot better. How he attacks the football has certainly improved since his time early in the NFL as a young guy out of Western Oregon. And then you kind of go down the list, and we'll see as the picture clarifies. But offensively, between the stability for Derek Carr, having Gruden another year, and the pieces that the Raiders have added, presuming it all goes to plan, this is an offense that is capable of having, those 30-point type of games, which is good because this defense isn't going to stop anyone consistently. And I don't mean to be negative, JT, but you just look at the importance of getting after the quarterback. Raiders are not there yet. They need Arden Key to take a huge leap in year two. He's got to get a lot stronger. Ideally, the Raiders will be able to do with him what they hope to do as a rookie, which is to really have him be a situational third-down type of a guy. He played way too many snaps last season, so we'll see how the Raiders can get after the quarterback. But if, based on what the Raiders have done to help their own quarterback, they should be a better football team in 2019.
Always enjoy the conversation. So informative. At Gelkin NFL is where you can follow them. Thank you, Michael. Have a great weekend. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Take care.
You got it. There he is, Michael Gelkin. That's a great conversation. I mean, that's NFL radio in an NFL market. I had nothing to do with it. You just ask him the questions, and he is a elite beat writer for the Las Vegas Review-Journal, who's embedded up north with the Raiders in the Bay Area and coming back here. That's a guy like Ed Graney, and the resources that we're going to use with Scott Baer, Michael Gelkin, Paul Gutierrez, obviously Ed Graney, the guys who are out on the road covering the team, that we're going to give you every week on this show. Raider Nation content lives here in this time, and we're going to give you that because we're getting closer. And again, I just wanted to finish up the tour, and when I saw it out there today, I was talking to Tom Bland. I've known for over 20 years. He's an executive with the Raiders, and he's really one of the point men, if not the point man, on that project. And we were trying to get together for months to get me out there, and I was able to do it today. And I couldn't believe it. I could not believe what I was seeing. He took me to the open lanai area where the window's going to open, looking back at the strip where the torch is, the Al Davis torch. The size of it, and the torch isn't there yet. But I'm going, where's the torch going? And he walks me over, and I go, how high does that go? Well, it really goes through three levels, and it's going to come out. This cauldron, it's going to blow you away. And then depending on where you sit, the way to look back at the strip is going to be exceptional. But I like the club sections, and I wanted to go to the upper deck, which is not built yet, right? So they're putting layers in. So we went as high as we could, and we walked around where we could on the visitor side, which is closest to the strip. And I couldn't believe the sight lines and what I was looking at. And I said, take me to the suites, where these suites are going to be. And there's going to be the owner suite, the owner, like Mark Davis, the owner, and the people that are the elite, highest priced tickets in the owner suite and what they're doing to build that out. Then the club section and then the club seats and all of it. And it's a construction site. Again, I have the pictures up on Twitter at JT the Brick. But I was just impressed, and the place is spotless. They care about that. And the coloring, the silver and black, they are so detail-oriented that if paint goes up and it's not the Raider colors exactly, it comes down. No, it's not the cowboy white. It's the Raider white. When you go silver and black and they use a white scheme, what they're doing with the roof and the concept of the roof, which is not going to be see-through because fans would get, you know, sunburned, and they'd have issues out there. But the material that they're using eventually for the roof and what it's going to be like and the comfort that's going to keep the air conditioning in. And then the big thing for me, the hook, was the tray of grass. So they basically built a freeway overpass. You know, we have Project Neon out here, and they're doing all the construction. Think of something that big, which is going to roll the field in. The football field's going to come in on a roller on this machine that looks like the size of a highway overpass and take the field in and out of the stadium. Incredible. Compared to what the 49ers did at Levi Stadium, where their fans are uncomfortable in the sun and in the heat, and they kind of took, I wouldn't say they took the easy way out, because the Niners did some pretty cool stuff up at Levi's in regards to their Hall of Fame and a lot of the amenities they had. But the stadium and the way it's built compared to what we have here coming up off the strip for Raider Stadium, like nothing you've ever seen. And I thought about UNLV. I was talking to Tom about that because we had Tony Sanchez on yesterday. And the opportunity that players are going to have to play at UNLV going forward, this recruiting class and the next one to come, it's really important for Tony Sanchez to sell that mission to everybody and the vision about playing football games. And we know that UNLV football is not elite like Michigan. It's not elite like Ohio State. But the UNLV football players are going to play in a much better stadium than Ohio State, Notre Dame, and Michigan. It won't have that history. We know that. It's not going to have the history of the Rose Bowl where UCLA plays, but it's a much nicer experience for the fans who are going to go support the team. How could you not recruit kids and go all around the country and say, hey, look at this picture where the Raiders play. You can play all your home games in Division I college at this program. You've got to get kids who want to have that experience, especially younger kids now who are looking at their phone, looking at Vegas, understanding what's happening here. It's all a part of recruiting. We had George McPhee on yesterday, the GM of your Vegas Golden Knights, and he talked about how he's recruiting and how he's able to get free agents and players because they want to play in Vegas. Well, that's going to be the hook with the Raiders and UNLV at that football stadium. I'm not going to say it's going to be the nicest stadium. I think it's going to be the sharpest one with some of the coolest amenities because of the strip. I mean, say what you will about L.A. I know there are Rams and Charger fans listening. It's in Inglewood. okay? I don't know if you've been to Inglewood lately. I have. It's in Inglewood. It's not in Beverly Hills. It's not off a strip. It's not what we have here in this town. If you don't mind going to Inglewood, no one's going to Inglewood. They're building this huge stadium for NFL Network. They're going to have the Academy Awards there, rumors are. It's going to be the biggest football stadium ever, bigger than Jerry's World in Dallas, which is great. You tell me if you're going to Inglewood, California to see the Chargers play, if you're going to stay after the game and have a steak in Inglewood. You're not. You're going to go to Hollywood. You're going to go to Beverly Hills. You're going to split. Here, you'll be able to walk out of the Raiders Stadium and walk over the flyway right into Mandalay Bay, right into the Luxor, right onto the Strip again for dining, restaurants, bars, and that experience. That is what's going to make this town so cool on an NFL Sunday or an NFL Thursday or Sunday night or Monday night. When people come to this town to experience football, it's going to be better than any other experience they ever had. And we should welcome them all. Let them all come, stay in the hotels, and pay for the thing. And let them come here and rent cars, and let them go out to Lake Mead and Mount Charleston and Red Rock and go do it all and put money into this economy. Jobs, jobs, jobs. I mean, some of them want a piece of me up in Oakland. Believe me, they want a piece of me because I put this in their face 5 years ago on the radio up there locally. I said, you're going to lose the Raiders if you don't give them a stadium. Just give it to them. Give them the land. Oh, we're not giving anybody anything. Texas and this and that. Really? How's it feel now? Let the stadium be built and nourish the community so people have fun in their lives. Stop being the complainer, wondering who's going to pay for it. It has no effect on you. It won't affect your wallet, your taxes. It has no effect on you. If you're dropping dinners and cocktails, last night, Bobby, at the Nomad, after the game, my wife and I had a drink. So I ordered my typical drink. $31 for a drink. It was $28. Tip a couple of bucks. Threw in, I go, $31, and my wife's drink was $24. One round, $50 for a couple of cocktails for one round. I don't like one round. I like several rounds when I'm having a cabbie take me home or a Uber. And I couldn't believe it last night. I didn't complain about it. I didn't say take it back. It's too expensive. Life's short. We got a stadium here. They don't have one in Oakland. They lost the team in Oakland because the politicians got in the way. We're going to talk to Hacksaw coming up next, an icon in the business of sports radio. We'll ask him about how's life in San Diego without the Chargers. Think of what it's like doing a radio show every day in San Diego without an NFL team. When we talk hockey, we'll do that at the top of the hour, courtesy of the Henderson Hyundai Superstore, Boulder Highway in Henderson, the super deals that you're looking for. Yeah, I was disappointed with the hockey game last night. You know why? Because they brought nothing. We were there for 2 hours. They gave us player, the GM, Gary Lawless. I asked everyone, what do we expect tonight? Yeah, we expect we're going to play well. Nope. They are now waiting for the playoffs. And Fleury got some work in. I hope he's sharp in the playoffs.
Well, I was at the park earlier. We was throwing some routes, and some guys from Oakland was out there watching, and they was pretty excited. I caught one long pass, and guys was like, they was excited for me to jump in the black hole. So I'm looking forward to experience. I'm looking forward to, you know, leaping in the black hole, getting fans excited, you know, celebrating with Derek, celebrating with the guys. So I'm just here today, just the beginning of a great journey, and hopefully you guys are excited moving forward.
Antonio Brown, newest receiver for the Silver and Black. JT, back with you. One of the great sports talk hosts of all time, Lee Hacksaw Hamilton, joins us every 2 weeks, and we're thrilled to have him. Hacksaw, let's jump right in. I wanted to talk to you about the folding of the AAF, surprising some of the nuggets that you've heard, because San Diego was really excited about having a team there. What happened?
Nice to talk to you again, JT. Yeah, I think there's a lot of finger-pointing and a lot of blame going around right now. The end result is it really makes Tom Dundon, the man that came in to, quote, save it, finance it, et cetera, makes him really look unethical for the way he ended all this, the timing. It also obviously stains the reputation of Charlie Ebersol, the son of the great TV icon, as well as, to a degree, Bill Polian. But from all the NFL people that I've been able to canvass, the storyline that I get is they had a financing guy. I believe his name was Reggie Howard. He was a gentleman who tried to buy the Minnesota Vikings a group of years ago and didn't vet out positively. Anyhow, he's the one that I was told was going to bankroll this thing with Ebersol and Polian. And in the process, he saw how much money they were losing right from the get-go. And instead of putting $175 million in, as had been agreed to, he walked away after losing about $28 million just a couple of weeks into the regular season. And then Dundon came on board, and he bankrolled it. And evidently, he didn't pay much attention that he was also acquiring not only the league, but a ton of debt that had already been run up. And starting a venture like this is unbelievably costly from a player personnel standpoint, from an equipment standpoint, from a health insurance standpoint, etc. And they hemorrhaged money. They lost $70 million, I was told, in about 4 months that Dundon actually was the lead investor. And he pulled the plug on it. And the way he did it was bad. There's a trail of debt from here to Las Vegas, hotel bills, hospital bills, airline payments. There's just a lot of stuff out there. And I don't know how they're going to solve all this. The players obviously were victimized to a degree, but you know, all the way down to the little guys, the vendors at the stadium have all been stiffed by this league. So I don't know how Ebersol's going to regain his credibility. I don't know how Polian can put out this oil fire of controversy. Players are scattering. You know, some of the players were forced to pay their way home. Some clubs helped take care of them, but others did not. There's hotel bills unpaid for, plane flights unpaid for. It's just a real bad situation, and Dundon has not talked to anybody in the Carolinas about why he handled the business the way he did. So it is really ugly, but that in a nutshell is how it started, what happened to it, and where it is as we talk on a Friday afternoon.
Hacksaw joins us. That's what's fascinating to me, Lee, because I understand why he pulled the plug. When you start to see losses, and those losses are building, and you're looking at the numbers, I know it was different. I was involved with the XFL, with the Vegas team, and they could have sustained that. They could have took on more debt and easily gone another year, but McMahon's such a big businessman, he knew that eventually it would fold. But what I don't get is how come they didn't have revenue in place? Where were the advertising dollars, the TV dollars, everything that Polian, and you made a great point about Charlie Ebersol and his credibility going forward, why didn't they have more of the revenue lined up in advance so we wouldn't hear these horror shows about no money coming in?
I was told by a team executive that they were overwhelmed with the amount of money they had to pay to secure stadium leases. And then when they decided to do the joint training camps in San Antonio, where they brought all eight teams in and all their players and all their rosters and put them up for a month, they just got hit by a tidal wave of expense. And then the health insurance for all the players, they evidently just didn't have knowledge about the depth of that expense. So they just got killed very early. In addition, when you start a new league, JT, revenue streams are normally TV. Well, yeah, they could bang the drum. We got CBS and the NFL Network and TBS to televise games, but there weren't a lot of dollars attached to those TV contracts that they signed. So, I mean, it is shocking that it filtered out the way it did by the time they got to the finish line. But Dundon, to me, has to be blamed to a degree just for the way he left everybody out to hang and dry. And he did this unilaterally. He did not take input from any of the board of directors. In the bigger picture, what they really needed to do, and I had a person who worked for one of the clubs, not in San Diego but out of town, tell me, what they should have done was taken this whole year, lay the groundwork, get the working agreements with the union and the NFL to get access to the right players, not street free agents that were working in supermarkets or guys in banks or grad school, but the right street free agents. If they had taken this year to do it, they might have had a chance. But in all honesty, and I talked to an NFL executive today, that you can't put together a deal to access our players with a snap of the fingers. You don't do it over a cup of coffee. The union controls everything, and you're talking about pension benefits, scale of pay for players, insurance coverage for players. It's a very complex package to negotiate. And they never did it. It's like Dundon walked in the front door with Damaris Smith and the union and said, this is what I need, do it. And the league said, no, we have to walk through every process there is. Because each of these guys that, for example, played in NFL Europe, which was an NFL-sanctioned thing, those guys came under the collective bargaining agreement and some type of special financial due. You don't do that at the snap of the fingers. I was told that Polian and Ebersol decided to jump in the pool now because they wanted to beat the XFL, mm-hmm. which they knew was going to be up and running in 2020. I will say this about the XFL. I had an executive or a guy that was a front office executive. When they folded that thing, they took care of the coaches that were under contract. They gave them anywhere from 6 months severance to a full year if they had that left on their contract. That, as tacky as you might think wrestling is and the leadership of all that, they took care of a whole bunch of people when they turned the lights out in the XFL, very different from where they are now. I know Polian's trying to put out this oil fire, but I don't know if he's got the resources or the right people to help him put this oil fire out.
This is a fascinating conversation with Lee Haxall Hamilton on the death of the AAF as it, if you look at how this fell apart. Lee, we had the championship game here in Vegas, and I talked to someone here who's really high up in the industry and sports and hotels. They had a couple of hundred hotels at least here for the championship before they decided to move it to Frisco, Texas. And you're talking about Vegas, and those were going to be hotel bills and restaurant bills and bar bills. It's a big part of the community here, and it would be a big part wherever they had the games in the postseason and the championship game, and it really affects it. And again, I can't get back to that point you made about Ebersol and the reputation for Polian going forward, because they're really throwing the other guy under the bus like he's the bad guy. They had to see some of this coming. Polian had to be in some meetings going, look at the bills that are piling up, how we're going to pay for it, and he's a Gold Coat Hall of Famer. How will it affect him?
Well, I concur, and maybe part of the blame goes to the original investor, the guy who tried to buy the Minnesota Vikings, who just up and left them holding the bag. So
no.
I would expect there's going to be lawsuits after this. Now, I don't know who you're going to sue if who you're going to sue has no money left. I don't know where all this is going to filter out. But the players, the players did make $70,000 to $85,000, or they're going to get most of that, or it's already been paid to them. So, as upset as people might be, JTG, I don't have a plane ticket home. Well, you got paid a chunk of money to go play, so write the check, and you got the experience, and you got some film on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's 18 guys have signed in the first day that they become free. Now, I don't think, and this is really part of the root of the problem, there's not a lot of these guys are going to be in the NFL.
Yeah.
If I firmly believe, JT, if they could have gotten a working agreement with the NFL union and gotten access to, give me a name, Landry Jones, backup quarterback, Josh Dobbs, backup quarterback, Mason Rudolph, backup quarterback, those are guys in Pittsburgh. If they could have gotten those guys here in a spring league who are identifiable under NFL coaching, like Mike Martz, like Steve Spurrier, like Singletary, et cetera, Neuheisel, then it might have worked. Recognizable names, work in agreement with the NFL. But the NFL does not want to take on a pile of debt. They lost $800 million in NFL Europe. Now, that was an investment to grow the game in England and Scotland and France. And even though they lost a ton of money doing the Scottish Claymores and the Berlin Thunder and Frankfurt Galaxy and all that, it did develop players, but it also marketed the game in England. And even though $800 million is an absolute ton of money, what it was an investment for TV contracts, an investment now to play all the games during the regular season in England.
Mm-hmm.
And so it did, to a degree, it worked out in terms of the bigger picture of what the NFL tried to do in Europe. This, had they worked it out, it might have worked. NFL executives tell me, yeah, if we had a developmental league, but it's not something you do over a cup of coffee and donuts at 8 o'clock on a Thursday morning, the day before you pull the plug.
Haxall, let's wrap it up with the Padres 5-3 start. Machado, it looked like opening weekend was great. The crowds were big. It seems like everybody's happy and engaged now with a team now that's going to be competitive. How do you see it?
Well, they fixed the franchise. We have a 162 game schedule. You've got four very young pitchers. Average age of the starting rotation is 22.4 years. That's pretty young. And they're going to have to monitor the innings of all these young arms. Two of them are coming off surgery. But so far, so good. I think we'll have a bunch of bullpen days as we go along. And Machado is a talent. Machado's a little bit tainted, but he's a talent. And I firmly believe that Manny makes everybody in the batting order much, much better. So going forward, it's going to be fun to see him grow. Anything is better than what's in my rearview mirror, which was 66-96 last season. So they are making progress. Dodgers are in first place. Giants are a mess. Colorado's twixt in between. Arizona's rebuilding. So there's a lot of room in the West, in the National League West, for the Padres to make an elevation. Are they a wild card team? I don't think so. But again, if all the young pitchers stay healthy, I guess anything's possible.
I'm on LeeHaxallHamilton.com almost every day. One man's opinion on sports is the best out there. If you're prepping for a show, if you love sports, if you want to stay up to date. Lee, we love having you on every 2 weeks. Thank you.
My pleasure, JT. Be well.
You got it. Lee Hacksaw Hamilton. I always say that if you don't know who he is, because we're in Vegas, know who he is. He's an iconic guy. I would not be in the business if it wasn't for Hacksaw. When I was driving around as a former stockbroker in San Diego, calling radio shows, right, because I'm always beating everybody up for not calling this show, I was calling his show because I would pull over and go, oh, my God, I'm going on with Hacksaw. They'd be ready, JT, you're next. And I'd sit there pulled over in Point Loma, La Jolla, Mission Beach, ready to call Hacksaw because his show was that big and it had an impact on me. I felt like if I could get on the radio as a caller with Hacksaw and he would agree or disagree with me, I remember hanging it up vividly going, wow, that I made a difference today. I use sports radio as a weapon. I think you could make a difference not only by listening, because we love you to support our sponsors and come to our remotes and do all that, but call in at 876-1340, get your opinion out, or tweet at JT the Brick. There used to be no Twitter, so people would have to call to disagree. Now people anonymously go after the host on Twitter and say some vile stuff. I like to talk to people. 876-1340. We have an open segment coming up. Next hour, two of my favorite guests. Kevin Bollinger, saw him last night in the press box from Fox 5. We'll talk to him about the Raiders, the Golden Knights, and Schmitty, James Schmitty Smith on boxing. We will have a boxing insider every week. It's either going to be Al Bernstein, Kevin Ioli. We had Barry Tompkins on doing the show box. And Schmitty's going to go over a couple of the best fights coming up and the pound-for-pound list. Because I think it's our job in Vegas to talk boxing, because we're the boxing capital of the world, and a lot of boxing fans here are in town. All right, when we come back, we'll reset with the Golden Knights. I want to get that at the top of the hour, but I'd like to set up your phone calls at 876-1340. You can't be happy with this team. You couldn't be happy with that last night. That was not an effort. That was not a playoff effort by a team in Arizona that was playing for their playoff lives and convincingly won the game. What are you concerned about with VGK? 876-1340.
The first period I had no issue with. I thought it was a competitive first period. And after that, just looked like we didn't want to play.
Yeah, Gallant saying they didn't want to play. Turn up the marshmallow. I saw a marshmallow last night. Yes, I'm going to admit it. I'll tell you what I did last night, which was pretty wild. So I went to the hockey game last night. We hosted the show there for 2 hours. Had a great time. It was my wife's birthday. She went with a girlfriend, and afterwards, we stayed around the park there afterwards. And then we went to the grand opening of Chaos, the new club and pool experience at Palms. So last night was like the grand opening, reopening, whatever you want to do it. The amount of money that has been put in, we talked about this with Johnny Katz, the man about town, yesterday on that. And it was the most enormous thing I've ever seen. I got my friends who I love at Hakkasan, and we like to promote other places, all the great venues here in town. So the Palms opens up their new pool and their new nightclub. And I'm not nightclub guy, and I'm not running around like I'm in my 20s, but we went last night. And I've never in my life seen anything like it. I can't believe the size and the scope of what the Palms has done and Stations has done over there. I can't believe it. We walked around the pool. The cabanas looked like condos in Manhattan. The cabanas were crazy. It looked to me to be two to three times bigger than Encore and Encore Pool and Beach Club and all of that. So I don't know who's in that space, who's in the nightclub space. We know all the players here in town, and I wish them all well. They're going to do well. This thing was a monster. I walked around the place looking at all the art, the nightclub, the luxury parts of the nightclub. And, Bobby, it's like nothing we ever thought of as a kid. If you watch the documentaries like I do on Studio 54, mm-hmm. or you look at the Palms and their first run with Rain.
Club Rio back in the day,
whatever it was. The balls, the brass balls and the greatness of the Fertittas to do something at this level was incredible.
Especially for the locals.
For the locals.
This is a local place.
Look, I don't know how they're going to do it, and I'm sure bottles were popping all over the place. People were having fun. But to walk outside of the nightclub, so the nightclub opens up to the pool, and to see, I thought there were thousands of people there. And 5,000, whatever it was. I couldn't believe the amount of people there. So my big takeaway is just simply this. there are going to be thousands of people every night at the Palms. Not hundreds, because the place is as big as anything I've ever seen in my life. And, you know, I've had a good history with the Palms and the Maloofs and what they're doing. I'm tied to the Hard Rock. That's where I met my wife. I love the joint. I can't wait for the Hard Rock and Boz to change it up. It's going to go to Virgin. I love my buddies at Hakkasan. We do stuff with them with Level Up. Love when everybody's doing things in town. But that scene last night was about, I don't get wowed much. That was incredible, and to see it happening off the strip at the Palms, bravo, congratulations to Stations and the Fatitas. It was that cool.
And to me, that is one of the most amazing things about living in this town.
Yeah.
Because every year, you'll have a club that'll open up, and it'll be the most fabulous thing you've ever seen in
Absolutely.
Your life. And next year, someone's going to top it. How they're going to top it, you have no idea until they open it, but every year, someone tops
I'll tell you this, Bobby. I hope it does well, and I want everything to do well out here. But if it didn't do well, I don't know what they'd ever do with that space, because that's the biggest space I've ever seen in regards to the combination of what they're doing. If you drove by on Flamingo and looked at the Palms over the last 2 years and seen the remodel going on and heard about it, but then being in there last night and seeing it, it was a masterpiece in regards to size. Some of the guys I was with there last night with my wife, we were just looking around, and then Marshmello comes out with the Marshmello head, and everybody's starting to go crazy. And guess what? And again, I'm not going to talk bad about him, but Vegas Dave, who's on the Showtime show, who was the big gambler here in town and won the $2.5 million, he was right underneath me. We were in a box above him, and he was. So they come out with the signs that say Vegas Dave, and they're popping bottles of champagne, and he's taking all these pictures. Whatever, good for him. But I'm telling you, he took that night as, in his mind, the biggest sports better in town, size-wise, in his mind. And he threw a party there last night, and there was more champagne floating around his deal. And I'm sitting there with my buddy Tori and my wife, and we're looking down, and all of a sudden I look down onto the dance floor, and there's women carrying V-E-G-A-S Dave across there. I go, oh, look at that. Here we go. Mr. Gambler's here. Everybody's a sharp. Everybody's making money. Nobody loses with their bet. Everybody's making money. Nobody talks about their losses. I don't know him. I don't know him well. I've never met him. He hasn't been on this show. But believe me, he knew the venue last night to be seen. I can tell you that.
I've never heard of this guy until you just told me about him 2 seconds ago. But God, this is the town. If you're going to have blatant self-promotion, this is the place to have.
Well, we had Bill Krakenberger in studio and Cracks on that show, too, along with Kelly Stewart, who's doing really well in her career. A lot of people we know on that show, but I bumped into him last night. I wanted to get to something quickly again. One of my pet peeves is LeBron talk when LeBron doesn't need anybody talking about him. It's like probably my biggest pet peeve. Why are people listening to talking heads talk about LeBron all day? Because LeBron is out of the playoffs and he's not playing. He was with Kevin Durant last night and with the Warriors and the Lakers, and he was talking to Durant, and they were covering their mouths, and everybody's wondering if LeBron's starting the pitch there. Not the case, but Kobe Bryant talked about LeBron on a show and a podcast. I thought this was really good content from Kobe, arguably the greatest, top two or three Lakers of all time behind Magic and Kareem. This is what he thinks about the LeBron move.
Do you get a chance to talk to LeBron, and do you guys chat?
No. I mean, there's nothing to chat about. Like, he knows and I know. Injuries decimated the team. Just relax. Come back next season. Regroup. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, I think he has enough poise to understand that. The thing that maybe caught him off guard was just the market. And, like, you know, like I said, fans here don't play.
No, they don't play.
Like, you know, I know. Because, like, I was dealing with it when I had, you know, Smush and those guys, Smush Parker and those guys. I'm looking around like, dude, what you want me to do? And LA is like, it's your fault.
Right.
Figure it out. Like,
That's
you got. We don't want to hear that. We need a championship. The buck stops with you. Figure it out. And that's what LA don't play, man. And that's how they bring the best out of their players.
Anybody who thought LeBron was going to be successful with this roster has lost their mind. Who did not see that coming? As my wife said when she saw it, this is going to be a hot mess, because she knew Livingston, and when you look at Lance Stephenson and Rondo on the same team, who thought that could even be good? Now, they were good already early in the season, then LeBron got hurt, but it wasn't built to succeed. Now they have to get Anthony Davis. I want you to hear Steph Curry quickly, too, because Steph Curry had something to say, because everybody's talking about LeBron. Here's this.
Was it 9 straight finals you went to? 8? I'm sure it's a different experience for him, for better or for worse. You know, obviously the rest of the league continues to go. A lot of talent, a lot of great storylines, people chasing championships, but he's had an amazing run and pretty sure he'll be able to reset for next year and regroup, but it's just different.
Both Steph Curry and Kobe said LeBron needs to regroup. I think that's really interesting. The biggest story this week in the NBA by far was the murder of Nipsey Hussle and the impact that that had on so many NBA players who played with a heavy heart, including Russell Westbrook, who had a 20-20 and 21 game, one of the great games of all time. That hour flew by. Kevin Bollinger is going to join us coming up from Fox 5. Also, Schmitty, one of our great boxing analysts. We'll reset here at the top of the hour with the Golden Knights and what went on last night at the Fortress.